on the deepest levels of common consciousness among his men. This is a difficult area to address, but essential. How does one read into the behaviour of a fighting fleet the deep, half-conscious preoccupations of the people who man its ships? How do the semi-understood but widely inherited ideas about purpose, violence and victory, which are present in any evolved society, shape the way men behave in battle? Battle is not simply a question of ideology, military expertise or technology. Deeper and more personal forces are in play, and intimate battle, of the kind Nelson invited and created, inevitably engages men at their innermost levels. By 1805, the sequence of violent and revolutionary events in Europe over the previous 15 years had established in England, or to be strict, re-summoned, a form of millenarian fever which had not been seen since the 17th century. The template for this fever came from the prophets of the Old Testament, from Deuteronomy, Daniel, Ezekiel, and Isaiah, and from the Book of Revelation, which draws on them. Deep in that Jewish tradition, and radiantly powerful in those books, is the idea that a moment of fearful justice will come when the wrath of the divine descends on earth. It will know no compromise. Its very violence is a measure of its goodness. Peace is inaccessible without that violence, because violence is righteousness in action. Apocalypse is the route to millennium. Battle, sacrifice, the glittering sword, the rivers of blood, the midnight hour, the dangers that stand before you, all those were real enough at Trafalgar, and the new millennium of peaceful dominance they led to was not something in the next world, but in this, the unrivalled creation of a God-blessed, ragingly commercial British Empire. This was not the millennium of political freedom and equality of which the radicals in the 1790s had dreamed, but it was the only apocalypse and the only millennium which the British regime could allow. It is possible to see Nelson instinctively responding to this deep and half-hidden current in English thought and belief. The apocalyptic tradition required a conjuring, wise, intuitive, violent and triumphant leader. Nelson fulfilled many of those expectations. A high conception of his destiny in life and of his relationship to the cosmic and the divine was not alien to him. In his youth, he'd experienced precisely a visionary understanding of what that role was. In mid-1776, as a 17-year-old on board the Dolphin, desperately thin, only just emerging from a life-threatening attack of malaria, he'd experienced an extraordinary visitation, a moment of understanding. "I felt impressed with an idea that I should never rise in my profession," he wrote. "My mind was staggered with a view of the difficulties I had to surmount and the little interest," meaning his connections within the Navy, "that I possessed. I could discover no means of reaching the object of my ambition. After a long and gloomy reverie, in which I almost wished myself overboard, a sudden glow of patriotism was kindled within me, and presented my king and country as my patron. My mind exulted in the idea. 'Well then,' I exclaimed, 'I will be a hero, and confiding in Providence, I will brave every danger.'" Then, as Clark and MacArthur, his first biographers, who heard this story from a friend of his, Richard Bulkley, in Ludlow, went on, "The spirit of Nelson revived, and from that hour in his mind's eye, as he often declared to Captain Hardy, a radiant orb was suspended, which urged him onward to renown." England by 1805 was certainly drenched in that imagery. The angel of rage and the tradition of justified wrath had become commonplaces of the English mind. Nelson fulfilled the expectations of an archetype. His sense of daring and the totality in his style of battle, his understanding of the need for destruction as a route to creation, the acceptance of self-sacrifice, his portrayal of the enemy as profoundly wicked, his ideal of England as a place of beauty and goodness, all of that fueled his immense popularity.